It is our first off-canon episode. We are going through two movies the Coen brothers helped Sam Raimi make, 1985's Crime Wave and the Liam Neeson vehicle of 1990, Darkman. JFIO presents.
What? Are you kidding? We got us a family here.
This ain't no Coon, huh?
Okay, I'm not going to sit here and debate.
I'll show you the life of a man!
You will find a fortune. Good would not be the fortune you seek.
I suppose you think you've raised hell.
When I've raised hell, you'll know it.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana Abraxas. I've just been in a terrible auto accident.
What's the most you ever lost in the coin toss?
Sometimes knowledge is useless.
Accept the Mystery, a Coen Brothers podcast.
Welcome back to Accept the Mystery, a Coen Brothers podcast, where we go through every Coen Brothers movie and occasionally movies that aren't technically part of the Coen Brothers canon in extreme, thorough, excruciating line-by-line detail. I still love that theme. I feel like it means something of import is about to happen, even at like 11 a.m. on a Sunday morning.
Very special.
That feels special. This meeting here feels special, the three of us.
This is a special meeting.
This
special
moment.
Energy.
Not to go completely off movie topic, but I saw the movie Boyhood yesterday, the Richard Linklater movie. Really good movie. But now I'm like, man, every moment is special and we need to cherish it.
Aww.
This is only going to happen once, you guys.
Well, we're
and
filming,
then it's gone forever.
We're recording this for the next 12 years, right?
Yeah. You are planning on coming back here next year at the same time. And
yeah,
we're
absolutely.
We're going to find out again what you thought of Crime Wave every year for the next 12 years.
Feelings changed.
First of all, I'm joined by, sitting across from me is my co-host, the awesome Jackie Lekholtze.
Hello.
Welcome back. How are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm ready to discuss both these movies. And then sitting to my left is a writer on such films as A Holiday Heist and Mac and Devin Go to High School. And if his Twitter avatar is any indication, he is a bear wearing a necktie.
That's me.
Jared Golding. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm a dressy casual bear.
You're dressed down today. There's no tie.
I also shaved my whole body recently. Thanks for having me.
No, seriously, welcome. Thank you so much for coming by.
Glad to.
According to your IMDb, you also worked on Parks and Rec.
I did. I was writer assistant on season six.
Extremely cool. Could bring a writerly perspective to these movies. tell us how the screenplay held up.
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a lot of feedback on Crime Wave.
Yeah, our favorite.
Well, let's just get into our first segment then. Let's get started with this. We ask our guest questions loosely inspired by the movie in a segment called Inside Jared Golding.
2, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Oh no!
So in this case, that one always makes people laugh for some reason. I think it's just a goofy song. If you haven't seen Inside Llewyn Davis, it's just a great song in that movie too.
I haven't seen it yet.
Justin Timberlake is one of the people singing that song.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Justin.
There you go.
I'm
reason
so
enough to see it. Well, you're going to have to wait.
I know.
It's at the very end of this series.
I will wait.
Jarrett, in the first film we watched, Crime Wave, the villains are exterminators who, quote unquote, kill all sizes. Have you ever had a rat or mouse problem? And did you hire an exterminator or did you handle it yourself?
I've never had a rat or mouse problem. I've had a termite problem.
Oh, wow.
Okay. My last apartment.
Here, in LA?
In LA.
Ooh.
I was about to go to bed. It was like, for whatever reason, I was up till like 2 or 3 in the morning. Got into bed, rolled over, and just saw a termite infestation like right next to my bed. There was no like putting this off till the morning. So I had to get up, walk to the grocery store, get like Raid. They don't have like termite spray. So
right.
I just... And then my room smelled like Raid. It was a miserable experience. And
that's what the worst way to wake up.
It was really terrible.
Wait, did you have to get exterminators after that, or the Raid worked?
Well, the Raid worked to kill the living termites that were crawling over my
right.
carpet.
Ugh. But you realize, like, somewhere in your house, they're still there.
They're in the walls.
Yeah.
They're coming to get me.
Ugh.
I remember, I think I was afraid of termites, seriously, as a kid. I think I'd seen, like...
I think I was, too.
I think I'd seen, like, Garfield cartoons where they show termites, like, destroying a house in a couple of minutes. And I'd be like, oh, they're going to destroy my house.
Yeah, it was followed as soon as I got those dead, I moved out.
That's a good call.
I was worried. I was just my apartment was going to crumble off the side of the building.
Yeah, seriously.
And because, you know, you could kill 99% of the termites, but if there's a few left to mate, they'll just come back.
Yep.
There's no completely killing them. Cockroaches, they've been around a whole lot longer than we've been around.
Yep. I killed all sizes.
Good for you. Yeah, I had once. I found a mouse in my last apartment.
I have found like mice and rats, and it's really horrible because they live under houses and it's like not uncommon. Ugh,
and I never, and I don't feel bad about killing ants or termites or whatever, but a mouse, it's a mammal. It's kind of, it's a little closer to us, and we put out like rat traps.
Yeah,
and I've done that. And then you hear the snap, and you come and you see like there was like blood splatter all over our kitchen. It was a pretty violent.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Yeah, no, I got my roommate to like take pick up the mouse trap and take it out to the trash. I couldn't touch it.
I remember I watched this made-for-TV movie about Michael Jackson's like childhood once, and the whole point was he had no friends whatsoever except for this mouse in the kitchen, and then his dad killed the mouse, and that was really traumatizing for me.
Oh my god!
Yeah, well, that he was.
I could never. I don't know.
Didn't he have? He had like a rat friend, right? Ben, his rat friend.
Yeah, I guess so. He moved up to monkeys later.
That's he had a menagerie in his ranch. Also in Crime Wave, at a certain point, Vic and Linda end up washing dishes because neither of them had the money to pay the tab. Have you ever skipped out on a restaurant or bar tab, or been tempted to?
Oh my God, Jared! Don't say you have. I'm so disappointed.
I think any sort of statute of limitations would have passed on that at this point.
I've accidentally underpaid before and then realized it later.
Did you fix it?
No, it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, no. That's fine.
It wasn't worth the shame to go back. I was just like, I'll tip really well next time I go back to this restaurant. But no, I've never deliberately run out on a tab.
Yeah, no, even though there are times where I've eaten outside and I'm like, you know, there's nobody out here right now. I could just pick up and sprint if I wanted to and they couldn't do anything about it.
But doesn't that mean that the waiter has to pay, right? Isn't that true or is that not true?
It's the waiter's responsibility to chase you down.
No, but I mean, like, the waiter has to pay the tab, right?
I bet that's true. A different policy every restaurant.
Oh, okay. I just assumed that was like the policy in places. It's like the poor waiter gets stiffed.
I mean, I'm sure it's not just like the owner. I bet it is probably one of the workers who's like, you let this guy go. You didn't chase after him, so it's all on you.
Probably.
Yeah, I'd probably feel a lot of guilt in that situation.
You should. Just
I'm just saying I totally could have if I wanted to.
Hey, didn't we talk about on the last podcast how you've never stolen anything? So why would you consider running out on a tab?
Because sometimes it's nice to consider things that you would never actually do.
Okay, fine. It's just clarifying.
I almost beat up a hobo on the way in.
I bet, yeah.
I wouldn't do it, but it could be fun.
But sometimes you walk past guys and you're like, man, I could just take a punch at this guy and run. He couldn't do anything. No, I've never walked out on a restaurant tab. I have accidentally walked out on a bar tab, but that's because I left my credit card there.
You didn't walk out on it.
I didn't charge you. I guess they would have eventually charged me once I had to go back and pick up the credit card. I'm just saying there's options. It's shocking how much like our capitalist society basically runs on the honor code in a lot of ways.
That's true.
Or there was a news article I was reading about. There was a shop, and I think it's in like a small town in South Dakota because it's like the only place this sort of thing could work. But it's like a coffee shop that has no workers, no employees work there. You just go there and you can pour yourself coffee and grab yourself snacks, and there's just a bin where you're supposed to leave money.
Okay, but who puts that coffee in?
I think the owner. Whoever
you have to
owns...
bring all your own stuff.
Yeah.
You bring your Keurig machine to the coffee shop.
I think the owner shows up in the morning and just restocks and then takes the money. And that's it. That's all he does.
Do we know what his profits are like?
No, but he said that he felt like he had no real issues with actual theft, according to, like, I think he had set up cameras or something.
Is this a social experiment or just laziness?
I think laziness. And also not having to pay employees. Thinking I can save money if I can just trust people to do the right thing.
That's so interesting. Near the Santa Monica stairs, they have, like, big tubs with, like, water. Like buckets, you know, with like water, and it's also like honor system. And I wonder about that because I just don't really trust other people who do the Santa Monica stairs that they would like pay for every bottle of water they take.
Yeah.
Like, there's like shady people over there. Like somebody's
bottled
water.
I was thinking like buckets of like dog.
Oh, no. Right?
You'd better pay for that.
No, there's like buckets of ice and they have like water and it's like honor system. And
you're right.
I don't know. I'm skeptical of those.
It's the kind of thing where I feel like probably, I don't know, 80% of people are trustworthy, but there's definitely people who would just completely exploit that system.
Yeah.
I've always thought that if I were a homeless guy and not getting beaten up by someone like me on the street, I'd be very like smart. I'd go to Quiznos and I'd get all the free pickles, and you go somewhere and you get the free breadsticks, you go grab a free bottle of water from the public bucket.
I would just keep one of those paper cups from Quiznos, and then I could take that into any Quiznos and kind of say, oh, pretend I was already here, I can get a refill. Free soda for life.
Yeah, free handful of jalapenos.
The second movie we watched was Darkman. And during the movie Darkman, at a certain point, Peyton flips out on a carnival worker who denies his girlfriend a pink elephant.
Oh, that's such a great scene.
What's the coolest thing you've ever won at an arcade or carnival? And do you believe those games are rigged?
I do believe they're rigged. I got taken by a carny once at the Coney Island Fair when that still existed. A couple of buddies and this is a long story. A friend of mine got injured on the roller coaster there and got taken away in an ambulance, and she was going to the hospital. My friends and I are still at the carnival, and we decide, well, we can't go to the hospital now. We'll just be sitting around. We may as well win her something.
Yeah.
That's the good thing to do if you're being a responsible friend.
And you're also having fun and playing games.
Yeah.
But it's for your friend.
So we got really hooked on the idea of winning her some sort of carnival prize, and could not win for the life of us. We're playing against like 4-year-old children at the water squirting game, and they're dominating us. And so we finally give up. We're walking to the hospital, and at the fringe of the carnival, and there's this game where you have to throw a ball into a bucket and land it in there.
Yeah.
And we legitimately lost $150.
Oh, my God!
Trying to win this stupid... There's like a gigantic stuffed bear or something, and the carny actually felt so bad for us, he just gave us this purple, like, goat. It's like a stuffed goat.
Carny with a heart of gold.
So it's the most expensive stuffed animal I ever... they invested in.
Say that, like, I think, you know, that they get, like, the best stuffed animals. They just save them for those carny games. You can't, like, buy those. You have to win them.
We should have gone and bought a $150. Do they make $150 stuffed animals? Maybe.
I'm sure they do.
They probably do. They're, you know, Beanie Babies.
Like, what's that store that was at the Grove that was, like, the high-end toy store? I feel like that one would have, like, all the big, beautiful stuffed animals. You gotta be able to buy anything. I can't believe there would be stuff that you could only win at a carnival.
Did you see the story that was going around? The guy who tried to win that Rasta banana and spent like his life savings on it.
No,
it was like
I don't know what a Rasta banana.
Yeah,
it was a banana with like heavy lidded, bloodshot eyes and a Rasta cap.
Okay,
it's clearly like a high Jamaican banana.
And it was something I buy at like a weed dispensary here.
Yeah, no, but it was like a big banana. It was like this would be a cool thing to have. Sure. I was jealous of the guy who wanted it.
You're just jealous of him wanting it.
Yeah,
I don't even have it.
I wish I could want the things you want. but he supposedly, according to this like local news story, like pet like tried winning it, spent all the money in his wallet, and then went to an ATM and emptied his bank account and spent his life savings trying to win this banana. Because just driven insane.
Yeah,
like you see these games and you're like, I know I could do this. And
that's
you drive
the
yourself
thing.
Crazy.
We were so close to winning. We just kept spending money, and the carny's like, you can only go to the ATM once. We're like, oh, thank you for looking out for our financial well-being.
That's nice. I guess because otherwise you could like almost sue carnies. If you spend enough money, then you're motivated to be like this game.
I don't
is rigged.
Think you could sue somebody for that.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well, they'll
sure.
pack up. They'll be gone.
Yeah, then you just won't be able to find
but
it
like,
again.
What would you be suing them for? Like enabling
fraud.
You
fraud.
Fraud because you didn't win it. That's
because you made an unwinnable game.
No.
And so you're stealing my money essentially.
No, that wouldn't fly. That's not fraud. It's a game. It's like gambling. There's no guarantee. You could never sue like a casino. I mean, I guess you can. Certain circumstances. But
yeah,
like, I don't think it would.
I don't know. A casino can't make a game where it's just impossible for you to win, and that's wouldn't that be illegal?
But
if they were like rigging
you,
blackjack,
like,
so you just
but wait,
lost
what's the
every
game
time
you were playing, Jared. It was like
it was the classic game of throw it in the bucket.
Yeah,
see,
you,
throw it in the bucket.
You can't win that. Just that would be your own.
It's nationally regulated. No,
but I mean, like that's like your own fault that you can't throw it in the bucket.
Sometimes they have like things inside the bucket.
Yeah, yeah. We think I'm pretty sure it was spring load. You had to get to 10 throws in the bucket, and we got to like 8, and every time you missed, you'd have to pay double what you paid before. So we started paying the game at like 50 cents, and we it all added up to $150. And if we had wanted to go one more turn, we would have had to pay $300 or something for the next ball. So we ultimately had to give up.
That's really funny, but I mean, you were still making it into the bucket,
but
so I don't.
There
think
may have been like a spring behind making the bucket harder to land.
Where
it
just where it essentially there's no way you can get it in the bucket; it's going to bounce out every time.
But they did make it into the bucket 8 times.
But so there could have been a second carny. behind the bucket.
Right, right. That's how these things work. They usually have collaborators.
I'm just saying it'd be so hard to prove. That's all I'm saying.
Or sometimes they have the guy in front of you who wins easily, and then after that guy, and he's like working with the carny, and then after that guy leaves, they put something into the bucket.
I'm just saying, like, every time people talk about suing for stuff, I love to get in and analyze like why it may or may not work. So.
Well, they might just be wanting to avoid the cost of having people sue them in the first place. Even frivolous lawsuits are bad for a business. That's why carnies are mobile. They avoid frivolous lawsuits that way.
I guess so.
Yeah, that's the whole.
That's the whole business model. I don't know. Being a cardi, it seems like a good life.
Yeah,
I think about it sometimes.
Another one of the things that Josh thinks about.
Yep,
I like that.
Also in the movie Darkman, Peyton develops the ability to create a mask of anyone's face for 99 minutes. If you could put on anyone's face for 99 minutes, who would it be, and what would you do?
Just for 99 minutes.
That's all you get.
And then
it
melts and bubbles off.
Melts and bubbles off.
Oh, gosh. I admit, like, Obama would be fun.
I knew you were going to say that. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. Just like, why?
Being the president.
You could, do anything.
Yeah, but not everybody would say that. I'm just saying. Okay, go ahead.
You just do really mundane things. You just go to the grocery and you're Obama.
Yeah, just freaking people out.
Cheez-Its.
Or just doing things like Obama would never do. Like, I don't know, cut people off in traffic and like honk at them and be like, fuck you. And they're like, was that Obama?
I love that you guys thought.
Why do you have white arms?
No, you would get like the hands too.
Yeah, he can make hands also. Let's just say he can also make hands.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
Fully covered.
I'd just wear the head
personally. Yeah. And have white arms.
I mean, of course, we'll get into this more later when we talk about all the plot holes in Darkman, but I'm also not as tall as Barack Obama, and I don't sound like Barack Obama, and if I put on just the face and hands, people would be like, oh, that's like a mini Jewish sounding Barack Obama. Nobody would think it's the real thing.
I love that both of you guys came up with like really mundane stuff to do as Obama. Like, you weren't like, I'm going to solve the conflict in the Middle East or anything.
I only have 99 minutes. So
There's not a whole lot you can do in 99 minutes when the real Obama shows up later after you've like distracted him for half an hour or something.
I just think that's really funny. Because like, maybe there's like one thing you could do in an hour and a half that would like change the course of history forever. But like, instead you're like, I'm going to go get some Cheez-Its. I'm going to flip people off.
Like one executive order.
Right. Yeah.
Coal mining is now illegal. Yeah, sign.
Something like that.
Who would you be?
That's a great question. I'm so on the spot. Who would I be? What if I was like a really good improviser? Like, what if I was like Thomas Middleditch for 99 hours?
You only get the face. You don't get the skills.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to get the skills. I can't be anybody else.
Bill Gates, I'd be a billionaire.
I can't put on like Jimi Hendrix's face and be an amazing guitarist.
Fair. Well, he's dead, so I don't see how that would help you. God.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the real problem with this scenario.
Well, because I always want people's skills. I didn't think about it and who I would
that
like,
wasn't the
put
question.
There. I know.
Right. It's just the face. That's all you get. Yeah. For me, I couldn't help but go sexual with this one and think like just you could do like crazy bedroom role playing stuff where I'm like any celebrity.
You could
and my girlfriend's any celebrity. We could be like Miley Cyrus and Liam Hemsworth.
That's your favorite couple.
Yeah.
Aren't they broken up?
Are they?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't like super keep up.
I don't know.
I'm not up
on my celebrity couples.
Would you get like the prosthetic skin Liam Hemsworth like dick?
I don't know what his dick looks like.
Well, but I guess neither does too many people.
No. So they would. You could just assume in this role play scenario, I just have a Liam Hemsworth dick.
I wonder if...
Or Scarlett Johansson and Ryan Reynolds.
If Peyton just has a big closet full of, like, celebrity dick masks.
he probably does.
He can match up with his different faces.
As long as he got a photo and then, like, put it through his little machine.
There's probably a paparazzi out there who specializes in that. Knows what everybody's dick looks like.
That's a good job.
I think it would be Jennifer Lawrence, not out of, like, specific love of her, though I do like her, but I'm just so curious about her in that, like, she rose up so quickly, so I'd just be kind of like curious to see like how do you get treated when you're Jennifer Lawrence? Since I can only put that person's face on and not have their skills, I would just kind of like
but you could be find a little bit what her life is like.
Yeah, I don't know, for 99 minutes.
And also you just get to look at yourself in the mirror and like
right.
just feel yourself up.
Strike poses, take selfies.
This is what I would do. Because I would be Jennifer Lawrence, and then I would like do a bunch of stuff to make me famous. And be like, oh my God, my BFF Jackie.
Oh,
and
yeah. Like, oh, there
who's
you go.
That? And then that way, after those 99 minutes are up, everyone's like, what? Like, who's Jackie? And then all of a sudden, my stardom would rise.
Right.
So
you
I
have 99
it out.
Minutes right. to do this.
Oh, I think I can do
the
it.
The new It Girl.
That's right. I'll launch a campaign. Jackie. Although it would be weird because I would have to put somebody else in a mask of me for right. us to be hanging out and being best friends.
But I think that's yeah. I think that's doable in this scenario if you have like a mask making machine.
Yeah, like I'll just take Sarah, Jared's wife, and one of my oldest, dearest friends, yeah. and just stick her in a mask of me, and then we'll be besties for
right.
the cameras. And then when the 99 minutes are up, everybody will be curious about who I am.
Right.
Pretty genius.
Everyone's talking about Jackie.
Yeah, just saying.
It was her. It was Jennifer Lawrence whose friend like tripped her getting out of the limo right at the Oscars this past year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That could be you.
I thought she just tripped.
Yeah, I thought she just tripped.
Well, or there
too.
Was a friend there involved, someone who like caught her or laughed at her or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I would do something like I would have the me, aka maybe Sarah, do something like that where like gives me some really good press.
That's
so,
cool. That's
yeah.
cool.
Pretty
yeah.
smart, right? Not
yeah,
bad.
That's actually like helping out your life a little bit.
A little selfish, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys wanted to be Obama and like flip people off.
Yeah, but I'm not going to be Obama and say like, hey, this Josh Richmond, he's going to save the country.
I'm trying to help this. I'm trying to help this podcast. So, I mean, if,
okay.
you know,
I totally get that.
If I was really famous
Richmond,
for this podcast,
if you were Jennifer Lawrence, would you say, man, just listen to Accept the Mystery right now? It's so
totally,
informative.
I would totally talk about it. I'd be like, there's this really cool podcast that I love so much and the hosts are amazing. All the guests are the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would do something okay. useful with it. Just saying. Done.
All right. Mm-hmm. Jackie, did you have any questions you wanted to ask before we moved on to talking about the movie?
I guess I have like love-related questions because there's so much love in Crime Wave.
Oh, deep love. That's yeah. a deeply felt relationship there.
But I guess I was curious if you ever had like a, I guess like a love at first sight kind of crush that you were like obsessed with for a while, like the guy in Crime Wave. What's his name anyway?
I think it's Vic.
Vic, that's right. We watched it 2 days ago. I can't remember anything about it.
Oh, man. I went to an all-boys camp. How's this? I went to an all-boys camp from third grade through ninth grade. And if we ever went on, like, camping trips and you see, like, a girl's camping trip
yeah.
walk by and you're like, oh, my God, I haven't seen a girl. And this is, like, prepubescent, horny Jared.
Uh-huh.
Right. And you see a girl's trip walk, they haven't showered in days, but you're like, I love her.
I like that.
We are going to be together forever when I track her down in the woods wearing my Obama
Man.
Mask.
It's just true also, just when you're like a teenager, everything is amplified.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
and everything you feel about anybody is like, either you hate this person more than you've hated anybody in your life, or I want to spend the rest of my life just like staring at this person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was like in love with every boyfriend I had from the age of, boyfriend, air mm-hmm. quotes, since yeah. like 12 to like 19. I was like, marrying this one. Oh, not this one. I'm marrying the next one. It's like, you thought you were
right.
marrying all of them.
If only you could marry them all and have like a harem full of guys.
That'd be great.
Why is polygamy illegal? There's no real reason.
I guess I changed my answer to I would have a mask of somebody who could make that happen.
Obama could.
Yeah.
He could sign an executive
Fine.
Order.
I'll be Obama and sign an executive order within 99 minutes. See, that's something useful that allows polygamy for women.
Only for women.
Yeah. I don't care about you guys. Sorry.
Whatever. Okay, sure. Women's rights and all that. Fine. Let's dive into the movies we talked about with a segment we call the Big Reviewski. Yeah! Yeah! So neither of the two movies we watched for today's episode are technically like considered Coen Brothers movies. Today's episode is really dedicated to Sam Raimi, who, according to some internet critics, has been called the third Coen brother. And certainly I would say the most important of their early collaborators. In terms of, well, first of all, we talked about on the first episode we did that Sam Raimi, when Joel Coen was working on Evil Dead, gave the Coens the idea to finance their own independent movie in the first place.
Right.
So super crucial in just setting them on a career of being filmmakers. But he's another Midwestern director. He came from Michigan, came from a Jewish family, also like the Coen brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So a very, very similar background. But yeah, after giving Joel his big break, him and the Coen brothers basically became good friends and collaborators and even roommates for like almost 5 years in the 80s. Him, Raimi, Joel and Ethan Coen, Frances McDormand, Holly Hunter, and Kathy Bates all shared like one big house in Silver Lake.
I so want to do something like that. It'd be so fun.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
I thought about that.
To live with Kathy Bates. That's the dream.
But like just have you and your homies in one big house like that. And like
yeah.
Stuff. That'd be
I mean,
so great.
It would definitely encourage me to write when I'm laying in bed and she's just like, keep writing. And then she breaks my legs every time I try to I'd have nothing else to do. But no, I mean, I'm just imagining, yeah, like the ideas bouncing around in that scenario. And they did. They worked on a couple of movies together. The Coen brothers were uncredited on Darkman, but they were hugely influential in the development of that story and the script. They wrote the Hudsucker Proxy together. That wouldn't be made for about 10 years after they wrote it, but they did write that together. And then their first thing they did after each of their debut movies, Evil Dead and Blood Simple, they wrote together a script for a movie called... Initially, Agent Irvin Shapiro wanted to call it the XYZ Murders. Just because he thought anything with X in it and murder in the title is going to sell. That was the only reason it was called the XYZ Murders. Eventually, somebody decided to change it to Crime Wave.
That was supposed to be called the XYZ Murders?
It was supposed to be called the XYZ Murders initially.
Call it whatever you want.
The name
I
of the
care.
City in Crime Wave was Hudsucker, wasn't it?
The prison.
The name of the prison, was Hudsucker Penitentiary.
Okay.
Yeah, Hudsucker.
The name Hudsucker shows up in a lot of Coen Brothers movies.
I'm not the Coen Brothers aficionado you are, but I'm honored to be here.
Well, that's why I'm here. I'm the expert, and Jackie's the newbie, and, you're the wild card.
Oh,
yeah. That's kind of the, yeah.
Yeah, just to clarify, I haven't seen any Coen Brothers movies until the episode that we're on.
Really?
Like, right. I literally haven't even seen The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I was asked that recently. Sorry for this tangent, but I was asked this recently, like, how did you avoid that, like, the spoilers, like, your entire life? I'm like, I have no idea, but I guess I'm, like, really stubborn. If I don't want to know, I'm not going to know. So, no spoilers, guys. That's all I'm saying. Nobody, like, tweet any spoilers about The Big Lebowski before we get there.
It's kind of perfect. No, you're a blank slate when it comes to the Coens. Nobody else is influencing your opinion on any of these movies.
That's right.
Which is great. Both of these directors have... in many ways, similar sensibilities. I think they share a love of, you know, kind of big, outsized performances and black comedy and sudden violence. But unlike the Coen brothers, I think Raimi is less of like an intellectual thematic director and more of a pure entertainer, which isn't necessarily meant to be a slam on him, more that his style is just make a really fun, crackerjack, entertaining movie.
Right.
Which, when it works, but I don't know if it always works. With Crime Wave being an example. First of all, extremely troubled production. Raimi was fighting with the production, with like the producers the entire time who were trying to micromanage the film and send it in a different direction. Raimi wanted to cast his friend Bruce Campbell as the lead.
Bruce Campbell, excellent in this.
Bruce Campbell was great at this. He completely out-charismed everybody, even just as the heel. And it would have been great to see a movie where he was actually playing the lead of this. I bet that would have been a lot of fun.
I think you can kind of feel the studio notes and the battle that must have gone into this movie tonally. Tonally, it's just all over the place,
yeah.
Crime Wave.
Yeah. No, it's completely all over the place. It's a ridiculous mix of tones.
Slapstick. The slapstick, and this is what year? 85?
85, yeah.
Just to be that purely slapstick in the 80s is really impressive.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're expecting any sort of real story or real stakes for these characters, it's not happening. Yeah.
But that's so annoying, too, because I feel like you could have done it slapstick, but also had a good, compelling story.
Raising Arizona is a perfect example of that. Which does have a compelling story and characters, but is also very wacky and slapstick.
Yeah.
This was just wacky and slapstick.
Yeah.
And it's
disappointing.
And that kind of pure gag movie, I think, rarely works. For every Airplane or
Naked Gun,
Wet Hot American Summer, even every time it really works, there's like 10 examples where it doesn't. It just completely flops.
The jokes and the writing need to be really on point for that stuff to work. And
this,
it was just slapstick for the sake of slapstick.
Yeah.
A lot of the
I don't think there were any funny jokes. Like, there might have been like a few funny facial expressions by Bruce Campbell, but that was about it. Like, everything else was like not funny.
There were a couple moments.
The nuns, that is a good one.
Yeah, that initial moment with the nuns.
Okay,
There's a lot of moments that didn't work. There were moments that worked. One sequence that I thought was funny is a moment. Yeah, they're at like the club. Mm-hmm. And you have the Louise Lasser, I forget what her character's name, Linda, I think.
Yeah.
Where she's, you know, the whole time, she's like, oh, I can take care of myself.
Yeah.
And then she opens up her purse and there's like no money in there. And I think an insect might even like fly out of her purse. That's like the level of comedy we're working with here. But but she says, where am I going to get $36? And she asks Vic for $36. And he says, I'd give you $36 if I carried that much money around. And then they say, where am I going to get $36? And then immediately they cut to the dance contest. MCU says, step right up to our dance contest. The prize is $36.
Classic.
Yeah. One of those like just funny setup release things, mm-hmm. and then they actually start dancing, and you think maybe they're going to win the contest, and then it cuts seamlessly from them dancing on the dance floor to them dancing in the kitchen washing dishes.
Yeah, but I guess like okay, it's not like it was like completely unfunny, but those are right. like tee-hee moments, not like oh ha ha, like that's a really funny joke.
No, those are lie. I think
we're
that's...
differentiating between ha ha and tee-hee, to be clear.
Yeah, tee-hee ha ha situation.
Big difference.
Chuckle worthy.
Yeah, sure. Chuckle worthy.
I think there were some strong chuckle worthy moments. Or the kill all sizes exterminators who changed it from rats to men.
I like that.
And then later from men to heroes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It's like okay, these are some good gags. Sam Raimi, in many ways, he's kind of like, I mean, throughout his films, I think he's kind of a gag artist. Be like Bruce Campbell's hand has a life of its own and tries to kill him with a chainsaw. which is another, wouldn't it be funny if this happened in the movie? And I think that's the way Raimi operates a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Some other details from the production of this. They demanded constant budget cuts. They were working with a very low budget. The production was affected by weird events. One of the actors, Brian James, trashed his hotel room in an attempt to exorcise a ghost from his light fixtures.
Sure.
Louise Lasser, the lead actress, was heavily under the influence of cocaine the entire time.
Oh my gosh. I guess that makes sense.
She fired her makeup artist and insisted that she apply all of her own makeup despite objections from the cast, and would often show up on set with poorly applied clown makeup and messed up hair.
Ugh, that's so sad.
I like that the cast objected. Yeah. That wasn't the production.
No, don't do what you're doing.
I don't want to be on the camera with this.
And then multiple times where she outright refused to leave her trailer.
Diva.
Very diva. did not seem to enjoy being on this movie at all. Yeah, the Coens will not bring up this movie. Raimi has disavowed this and has described working on this as one of the least favorite moments of his career.
Aww.
Bruce Campbell said it's the kind of dog that usually kills a director's career for a young director like Sam Raimi.
I just wonder what kind of film they set out to make with this, because I don't think it ended up ultimately maybe where they wanted, especially
right.
disowning it later in their career.
I think the idea was they wanted to, I think I read a quote that they wanted to make just a mix of adventure and action and drama and comedy and romance.
Ugh.
And you can see there
noir.
Are yeah and noir, and you can see there are elements of all those things in the movie, but it never really plays like the romance, for example. There's this love triangle, but all I do is feel bad for Louise Lasser, who has to choose between the Bruce Campbell heel, who clearly doesn't care about her on one side, and then this weird, obsessive, nerdy guy who won't leave her alone on the other, and eventually just decides that's the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. It wasn't, like, well-established, either of those two relationships to me. Because at first, when you first see Linda, you're like, oh, she's, like, a woman in charge or whatever, and then just, like, the way she's acting towards Vic, and then all of a sudden, what's his real name in the movie? Bruce Campbell's character.
I think it's Ronaldo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then Ronaldo shows up, and all of a sudden she's like, "Oh, Ronaldo, like anything you want." It was just like, ugh, like where is this coming from? And then I think at first like they couldn't decide what kind of woman she was gonna be. So at first she was like sort of a strong character, and then all of a sudden you realize she's not, because she has this like weird weakness for Ronaldo, and then from there on she was like helpless.
No, she keeps saying I can take care of myself, and it becomes more and more of a joke. This particularly by the end, where she's teetering out of the car and all she's doing is screaming like, somebody help me. Like she's literally
get out of the car.
seriously, just jump out of the car. You had a lot of ample time to figure this out.
I know.
In a way, having just seen Miller's Crossing, I almost thought it was a riff on Verna, who they also said was a woman who could take care of herself, and she could take care of herself.
Right.
This was the opposite of that, where it's a woman who could take care of herself and can't.
Right. I know. No, it was annoying.
And I think Raimi kind of likes the damsel in distress role for his female characters.
A little bit.
That definitely shows up in Darkman as well. And Spider-Man. Yeah. I think there's that scene where he's got to choose between like Kirsten Dunst dangling off the bridge and like a bus full of school children. And he's got to decide who to save.
I think you could see some Spider-Man in this. Just the kind of like campy throwback noir type of thing, especially with you know, the newspaper elements of Spider-Man, that sort of thing. It has that kind of 20s, 30s feel to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think especially Darkman is where I saw
that. Yeah, sure.
But yeah, well, it's interesting to kind of piece out which seem like Coen Brothers elements and which seem like Raimi elements in this movie, because it was supposed to be like a real collaboration. Mm. And I think the setup of the movie, you can see you haven't seen Fargo, but it's very Fargo-esque of this businessman who has a plan to wipe out his business partner with a hitman, but things go awry and the hitman kind of just go out of control and start doing their own thing.
Yeah, and like parallel storylines.
Exactly. You got the parallel storylines and parallel characters. And there's a touch at the end of the movie after the big fight and Vic and Linda finally dispatch the two crazy exterminator villains. And then they catch their breath and they're like, who were those guys anyway? That's a very Coen Brothers.
I felt like it was like Coen Brothers-esque like in the beginning a little bit when it was setting up. It kind of felt like the guy was like in the jail and there was like this whole. I mean, even though I thought the transitions with like the you know like the music and the fading.
The flashback setup.
Yeah, that's
that's very very Raimi. Raimi.
Yeah, it seemed Raimi-esque because I was like, this doesn't seem Coen Brothers-esque from what I know. But
So
the beginning kind of did feel like Coen Brothers-esque, and then like all of a sudden the whole like middle part of the movie, like most of it was just this like slapstick, and then at the end it was like, oh, we don't even know who they were, and that felt Coen Brothers-esque too. But I don't know, I couldn't feel that many of their elements in it.
No, I mean it's a Raimi directed movie, and I think at least his visual style is the clear thing you walk away with. Everything is very big and amplified and over the
top.
Lots of music. Ugh. We talked about this while watching It's in many ways it's a very old school Hollywood filmmaker, you know, in the sense that, that's music one element. That's one element is that old movies used to be wall to wall music. Every scene was kind of like the music was just hitting home what emotion you're supposed to feel in this moment.
Right.
And that's something Raimi does in both these movies is there's never a moment of silence. There's always the music reminding you what you should be thinking and feeling right now.
Yeah. So the collaboration was like the Coen brothers wrote some of it, right?
Or they fully co-wrote the script.
Okay. Because you were saying earlier how it felt like because some of the parts about, I guess, like the storyline you were saying felt more like a Sam Raimi type of direction rather than Coen brothers. But is it really like the director who's calling the storyline? It seems like it would come more from the writing part of it.
No. That's the thing. I think the storyline came from all three of them.
Yeah.
Really working together. And
his directing, I guess, especially made it go a certain way.
His directing is more cartoonish.
Yeah.
And also the dialogue isn't very Coen-like, which they tend to write more stylized and I think a little bit smarter. And this is very, very, very straightforward and all the characters are just kind of saying what they mean.
Yeah.
I think like the ultimate best destination for Crime Wave is that movie that's being played on the wall of a bar.
I could see that. Yeah, because there's a lot of wacky visual jokes you don't really have to hear anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Bruce Campbell blowing a smoke ring that's a dancing girl. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that's kind of funny if you're just looking at it.
That actually kind of excited me because I was thinking about Roger Rabbit, but then it also didn't quite take that tone. That's what was annoying. It was like, what are you going to be? And it was none of the things you wanted
to be. Okay, because as much as Roger Rabbit is a cartoon, Roger Rabbit had real stakes. Okay. You cared about what happened to Bob Hoskins, and you even care about what happened to Roger Rabbit, this crazy cartoon character.
Mm-hmm.
You don't care about anybody here.
No.
And maybe it's because everybody acts like an idiot. Vic acts like a complete moron. just like he sees Mrs. Trant like walking away. She's tied up. And he just asks, you should stay inside. There's bad people around. Not even paying attention to the fact she's tied up and trying to escape.
Right.
Yeah, it was like too unrealistic. My main complaint every movie.
Yes. Oh, you this movie was unrealistic?
I didn't want to say it earlier, but now since you just said like that specific scene, that was like one of the worst ones. Where it was like, come on. Like, there's got to be some kind of reality in here. Because otherwise, it's like improv example. Everyone's doing wacky stuff. There's no explanation for why.
Yeah.
Like, there's no grounding in the reality or anything. So you're just like, this is annoying.
Or another example would be the safest hallway in the world scene, which I think the concept of having a safest hallway in the world is pretty funny.
Yeah,
but where, and
Monty
that
Python,
yeah, and that bit where she's just like walking through all the doors and you're just barreling through the walls.
Yeah,
and it's a nice gag. But then she pushes all the walls back and like all the walls fall on top of him and it like crushes him.
Yeah,
but if he could just barrel through all those walls like paper. Because they were just kind of like essentially cardboard walls. Having them all fall on you wouldn't hurt that bad.
Well, especially if you're in the doorway that already has a hole. Like,
yeah.
It's like, doesn't seem like he would actually get crushed by a wall part if he's running through the already like opened doorway.
It's just the physics of this world are like inconsistent.
It's like a live action cartoon.
It's like a it is like a live action cartoon. But even cartoons, I think, have a little more consistency in the physics and in their rules than is going on here.
Yeah. So many unrealistic
elements. A moment, there's like a line towards the very end of the movie where, you know, the nun finally shows up and saves him from the electric chair.
Yeah.
And she reveals, oh, I'm Louise Lasser, and I was wandering around in a daze for a while. And Vic says, oh, what were you wandering about?
Yeah.
It's like, nobody is that stupid that they would make that mistake.
That's true.
It's just, it's a funny, it's another chuckle-worthy gag in the moment that doesn't stick.
Mm-hmm.
And it does all feel cheap, and you don't ultimately care about these characters.
Yeah. Not satisfying.
Not
whatsoever.
Satisfying. Okay, well then, moving away from Crime Wave a bit, because I don't think any of us...
I believe we have beat that dead horse.
Yeah. Because, we'll just say, I don't think any of us really liked it, and I don't think anybody involved with the movie really liked it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like
That's
it.
So sad.
But it's worth watching to see, because this was such early movie-making experiences for both these guys, it's interesting to see kind of what directions they went in after this.
What lessons they may have taken.
Yeah, exactly. And I think... The Coen brothers, after Crime Wave, would go on and do more writing for higher projects. For the most part, they stuck with directing their own movies. Mm-hmm. And also, I think, in Raising Arizona, which is still one of my favorite Coen movies, and trying to take that slapstick tone and investing it with stronger grounding and a real heart and more interesting themes that are coming across.
It was 1987, right?
Raising Arizona was 1987,
okay. So
after. 2 years after this.
Hmm.
Raimi, on the other hand, I think he tried to get more dramatic as well and have bigger stakes. I think he just kind of ended up raising the stakes on everything, and his movies after this just went bigger in every direction. Eventually, you know, much bigger budgets with the Spider-Man movies, and bigger action set pieces, and then even the dramatic moments are bigger dramatic moments, even like edging into melodrama, which I think Darkman had a lot of. And Darkman's a better movie than Crime Wave.
Not an argument.
No. And it was a bigger hit. Sam Raimi really wanted to make a superhero movie. He tried to get the rights to Batman. He couldn't get the rights to Batman. Which, ironically enough, we mentioned Warner Brothers offered Batman to the Coen brothers, who turned it down.
Interesting. I love
it. Would have been amazing.
I mean, I love the Tim Burton Batman.
Yeah, so, no question. I think Tim Burton was the right person to direct that movie.
But you can feel some of that, this could have been like if you can see Tim Burton having done Darkman.
It doesn't hurt that Danny Elfman did the score for Darkman.
Yes.
Darkman.
Yeah.
Definitely gets a lot of the same tone across. And also the guy who likes to hide in the shadows and is really dark inside. There are Batman elements in this movie for sure.
You can feel that Raimi just wanted to do a superhero movie like that, and he couldn't quite come up with one as good as story as good as Batman.
And he tried to get the rights to The Shadow as well, couldn't get the rights to The Shadow. Eventually decided, okay, I'm just going to create my own superhero origin story from scratch. He started with just the concept of, I want a story about a guy who can change his face.
Mm-hmm.
Coen Brothers helped a lot writing it, and then he also supposedly offered Frances McDormand a role in it just so she could help pay her share of the rent. And then also got Liam Neeson, who had done a couple movie roles at the time, but this was his first starring role in anything.
I love him.
Liam Neeson's great.
Mm-hmm. You could totally... I don't know whether the movie becomes... what direction it goes if Nick Cage is starring in this movie, but that just kept screaming to me that so easily have been Nick Cage.
Well, why hasn't Nick Cage done a superhero movie?
Besides the one where he's on fire riding a motorcycle?
Right, but I guess I never saw that. And it's weird, I was just reading a story today about a trailer for a movie for the aborted Superman movie starring Nicolas Cage that never happened.
Oh, wow.
But that they shot a whole lot of footage for, and...
I need to see that footage.
Yeah. Nick Cage would have been very interesting in this part.
Especially for the scenes where his
emotions overcome him and he just kind of loses it.
Yeah.
I could see very like Wicker Man.
Yes.
Something like that.
I think he might have been a better fit for the part than Neeson, actually.
Yeah.
As much as I love Liam Neeson, and I think he's an actor who can do the dramatic and the pathos heavy material really well, and you definitely you feel his pain. A lot of terrible stuff happens to his character, and you can feel how hard he's feeling what's happened to him. But there's also crazier, wackier moments. Put like a piece of metal on his head and dance around like he's the Tin Man.
The Tin Man was great.
And I feel like he's got a tougher time with the comedy beats.
He's because he's not good in that scene actually.
Because he's not like a naturally wacky actor. You liked him in that scene?
I did.
That was the scene that made me think Nick Cage.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Just because he does that like crazy eyes.
Right.
And so much of this role is in the eyes because you barely see Liam Neeson's face most of this movie.
No. Yeah. He said he was drawn to the role because he liked the challenge of acting through a mask or acting through heavy layers of makeup.
Yeah. But also he couldn't speak American English. One of my main complaints.
That was definitely your big complaint in this movie.
I have a big problem with
people's
accents.
That didn't really bother me.
Ugh, it's so bothering.
Once you pointed it out, the second time I was watching it and you pointed that out, I was like, wow, he really isn't doing a good job with the American accent.
Yeah.
He should have just been Irish.
Yeah, just rock it.
Or whatever, I mean...
He's Irish.
Or whatever he's playing in Taken. He's not American in like the Taken movies, is he?
No, I don't think so. But
I don't think so.
I kept
just
wanting him
voice.
To do the I have a very specific set of skills
with
Darkman.
Yeah.
It just, there were a few moments that felt so right for that.
Right, because he became just...
I have a very special set of machinery that can make faces.
Yes. he eventually like, it's interesting how like at 60 he's become an action star.
Mm-hmm.
But this was his first time really trying a role like that.
Oh, you feel bad for him?
No, I'm just thinking about how cute he was like trying to do it this time.
Right.
In a dark man.
Not cute. Frances McDormand did not find her very attractive in this movie. It does not have classic movie starlet.
That's fair in a role.
She was playing a lawyer, so.
She was playing a lawyer. I mean, cute or not, I think she did a really good job in this movie.
She's good, but if you made this movie now, she's not the one getting cast for this role, even at that age.
No, that's true. She's not it because she's not a natural Kirsten Dunst-esque damsel in distress.
Right.
She is better at playing a stronger character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think she excels here when she's actually playing somebody who you can see is like affected by Peyton's death, but is also fighting like, why wouldn't you let me see you, Warren? Why wouldn't you let me help you? And it's actually being like a real partner to him until she's just taken up to the top of the building and is like dangling, save me, Darkman.
Sam Raimi.
I thought it was interesting that she basically admits that if he looked like this, she wouldn't love him, and he needs to have the mask for her to love him.
But that's honesty.
It's accurate.
Though.
Yeah. No, it's just not what you'd expect from the.
I mean,
no, okay. I'd love you no matter what.
Right. I mean, she can still. She's like, she's really sad to leave him behind, and she's like, Peyton, wait. And she makes a really good point if we're getting to the end of the movie, which is that just work a little harder on the skin, perfect it. You probably can figure out how to make it last longer than 99. You made it last this long. Just try a couple more times. I'm sure you'll get it. And then you just have a perfect face, and then we're happy.
Yeah, great.
Instead, he's all like, no, I realize now that my insides match my outsides, and I have become the terrible person that I look like. I'm a monster now. And then he just runs away, and you get the sad ending. Call me Dark Man. It's actually one of the rare moments where I feel like the happier ending would have been a more honest one than the sad ending. And I think that it was a little...
You think the happier ending would have been better?
That if he'd found a way to stay with Frances McDormand and perfect the skin, I think that might have been a more satisfying conclusion than him just kind of abandoning this project he's worked on his whole life and being like, I'm going to stalk the streets because I'm so emo and sad now.
Yeah, but I think that was more realistic because he went through like such a humongous trauma and he was like trying so hard and he was like being all these different people and going a little crazy, and then he has like all these anger issues because he doesn't have like nerves anymore. So it seems more realistic that you would like lose it a little bit and give up on your dream rather than like, it's all good, I'm gonna keep going,
I guess. And hey, maybe some of that stuff gets resolved in the sequels. There were two sequels to this movie.
straight to
DVD.
Not even DVD at the time.
I can see that.
Straight to beta.
I can see that. I guess I thought this could have been a more satisfying self-contained movie if he went through all that trauma but eventually found a way to like overcome it.
Right.
And I don't know.
Well, is he a superhero?
That's a really good question.
Because he gives himself a nickname at the end, and you don't ever really see a superhero with a steady love interest, but not girlfriend.
Right.
Like, what superhero is open with their identity with their significant other?
Iron Man. But again, also, maybe not technically a superhero. Somebody depends on technology, kind of like Darkman.
Yeah.
But what does Darkman do for humanity?
Yeah, Darkman is just out for revenge. Darkman's never tried to save the world.
How is he a superhero? I mean, I'm not like super educated on superheroes, but it seems like a superhero like does something to like help people, protect people.
Yeah, it has some sort of driving motivational force.
Well, maybe he considers himself a villain.
Right, yeah. Right. Maybe he's a supervillain now.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he's superhuman or not, there's a weird like exposition dump where he's in the hospital in that spinning machine.
Where the
doctor explains that they picked up this homeless man and did this bizarre procedure on him that killed all of his nerves so he could feel pain, also made him super strong and emotionally volatile.
Why do they need to be spinning? Do they explain that?
I have no idea.
I was watching that scene pretty closely. Why are they in a gyro ball?
Yeah. I guess because it looked cool.
Well, it definitely looked cool.
Yeah, it was like a purely visual interest type of thing.
Yeah, I think Raimi sometimes just does things because it looks cool.
Fair.
But also, why is this procedure done on every burn victim who comes through the hospital?
If that's they have
true,
a whole wing of
yeah,
them.
If that's true, wouldn't there just be like a whole bunch of dark mans roaming around?
Did they
only decide to do this for the first time on this guy?
Is he only Dark Man because he has the masks, or is he Dark Man because he has burns?
Right, it's weird. He's got kind of two separate origin stories going together. One is that he's a scientist who has mask-making powers, and the other is that like a crazy accident and a medical procedure made him dead to pain and super strong. And I guess that makes you super strong? I guess? I don't think it works that way.
He fell into that vat of science water?
Yeah, that
science water.
I assumed that was acid, but it didn't actually seem to burn his face off. It seemed like the explosion is what fucked up his face.
Right.
And no, but it did something to him.
His hands were electrified.
Right, yeah. His hands were for sure they destroyed his hands there.
He went through the ringer. It was not a great night.
I think one of those scenes is what made me coin my new catchphrase of I hate movies, which is like...
Oh, yeah. This is going to go on your soundboard, which we're establishing for next episode.
I hate movies because I hate violence. And I think there was like one of those scenes where it was like too much. And I was like, ugh, I hate movies because I hate when the violence gets like so much. You're like, I get it. I know.
I think that might have been at the very beginning of the movie with that cigar cutter scene.
Maybe, but I thought it was more around like him getting like burned in the vat and then the explosion.
It might be.
I was like, oh, I hate movies.
You were definitely looking away during the cigar cutter scene.
Who got
though.
To keep the finger collection? It was a pretty good collection.
Yeah, there were all sorts of interesting figures from all over the place.
Some jewelry in there.
Can you cut off a guy's finger with a cigar cutter?
He did it pretty easily.
It seemed very easy there. I don't think it can be done.
Jackie, give me your finger.
Yeah. another accept the mystery experiment. Robert G. Durant, the villain of this movie. Not a very terrifying villain name, as many times as they tried to make it menacing. Mm. Oh. Robert G. Durant.
Yeah, they went with the full name.
Yeah. At some point takes him on like a helicopter chase where he's dangling from the helicopter and he's trying to like knock him off. It seemed like at one point they could have just swung him into a building.
Yeah.
That went on for a long time. But then the main bad guy, the guy who was building the city...
The lawyer
reminded me a little bit of Christopher McDonald and Happy Gilmore.
Mm.
I think there was kind of like there was a period in the 80s and 90s, or like Shooter. The early 90s, Shooter McGavin, where just this kind of like super slick, super smarmy kind of bad guy who seems to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
His motivation seemed to just be he wanted to build a city.
Yeah, he's good-hearted.
Right. I built it all.
He was trying to keep the mob out of it with the...
Right.
You know, I...
At the end, what was it he said, though? Villain. Altruistic. There was, like, something that he said... He was like, on Darkman, like, you're just, like, destroying for the sake of destroying, but, like, I'm destroying for the sake of, like, building something greater.
I'm building something great. All you do is destroy through revenge. Yeah. It is something like that.
Valid.
Yeah,
I guess that is kind of valid. Like, he's at least got a vision. Dark Man is doing nothing but going after the guys who hurt him.
I kind of think that Dark Man is a villain.
Yeah, he's the bad guy in this movie.
Yeah.
Going after an innocent real estate developer.
Oh yeah, innocent. No.
He was a little creepy with Frances McDormand, but never actually like did anything bad to her.
I can
never
see Darkman as the villain in a Batman movie. I mean, it was kind of like Harvey Dent in...
Very Harvey Dent. Yeah, very much so.
But it's... okay, but he was only going after the guys who, like, screwed him over. Like, he wasn't just out trying to, you know, mess with everyday people. It was, like, guys who specifically hurt him, burned his lab. Like, he was, you know, he was just getting revenge. Well, like, he wasn't...
Well, except for that carny who he, like, bent his fingers backwards and threw him through the carny wall.
That was a fit of rage.
Because of his new problem.
Flashback into an 80s video and then emerged with the strength of a thousand men.
That was my favorite parts of this movie were the murder montages. those were so cool.
And he crushes the guy's rubber fingers. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's true that was, like, not called for, but that wasn't, like, as intentional. That's because he lost it. Like, I don't think that was part of his, like, plan. Was, like, I'm going to, like, lose my shit on, like, random people that I encounter in the world. Like, I think his real, like, intent was just to get revenge, which maybe was, like, overdoing it a little bit. Maybe he should have just moved on. But
right.
I don't know if that makes him a villain. That's just my opinion on that.
Yeah, maybe he's just a really hurt guy who is going after people we hurt. And now that mission is done, he's just roaming the streets being sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems likely. I don't know.
It's interesting watching Sam Raimi do the superhero movie because a decade after this, he would essentially reinvent the superhero genre with the Spider-Man movies. Mm. At least one and two of the Spider-Man movies, I really love those movies.
Oh, yeah. I like those too. And rewatchable, very rewatchable. Yeah.
When Sam Raimi is given the right material, he can do great things with it. You've got either with the Evil Dead series, which lets him just go crazy with the gross out splatter gags, and that's kind of a great setting for them, and a great lead actor with Bruce Campbell, who's a perfect fit for his vision. Or you've got the Spider-Man movies, where he finally has this giant budget and a great world full of superheroes and supervillains to play with, and he knows exactly what he's doing there.
This has a very like graphic novel feel to it. I don't know if in 1990, when this came out, if graphic novels were what we think of them now. I guess it was more comic, you call them comic books in 1990, whereas now you can get away with calling something a graphic novel. But I think he excels with that.
He does. Although, in comparison to, you know, in kind of like a post-Batman Begins superhero world, that going back and looking, this doesn't look nearly as dark. Mm-mm. You called it cheesy, I think, as we were watching it. It is a much cheesier feel to it.
Yeah.
And it's partly because Sam Raimi is kind of that old-school melodramatic filmmaker.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy who would just put in like a mustache twirling villain tying a girl to the railroad tracks just so the hero could save him, without, you know, without irony, maybe with a sense of camp, but just kind of straight ahead. No, this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this very classic good guy, bad guy, damsel in distress vision.
I also feel like there might have been a lot of music cues in this one too, right?
No, this was also wall to wall music.
Okay, that's what I thought. I don't like that, but that's
no, okay. It's not really my style either. It's a weird mix of the style and the substance of the movie that I don't think always worked.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had Danny Elfman; they got to put him to work.
That's true. That's true. And I mean, ultimately, I did think it was deeper with better performances than something like Crime Wave, which was just all surface, dumb, superficial gags.
Yeah,
but it didn't mean that every moment of this film worked for me either.
But a lot of good moments and. Was he the first one to drag a helicopter into the tunnel, kind of like Mission Impossible style?
I think he might have been.
That was kind of groundbreaking.
Yeah.
There's some cool stuff in this movie.
But in both Crime Wave and Darkman, though, he dispatches a bad guy by slamming him against a highway overhead path.
That's
highway
true.
Tunnel.
Overpass, yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like he's reusing his bag of tricks a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, no one saw the first one, so he may as well.
Yeah.
Overall thoughts on this movie, just Darkman is distinctive. I think the main character's plight, you really feel for him. He's a real character played by a real actor with a compelling motive, but ultimately just the tone is just kind of exhausting and nonstop, and also a little tonally all over the place in a way that doesn't quite work for me. And neither of these movies really 100% work for me. Because, ultimately, as much as I like Raimi and as much as I like his... I'm more of a Coen Brothers guy, and I like that style, and I like the themes that they weave into their work. There's more to dissect, I guess.
I really like Darkman, and I had never seen it before. I knew of this movie, but I feel like it fits in that like early 90s
canon of superhero kind of comic booky movies. And
yeah, I mean, it's fair to say that you know, Tim Burton's Batman, which came out the same year, definitely had its share of like big campy elements as well.
I think they really commit to a tone, and they do some world building in Batman that they don't do in this movie that may have been helpful.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Tonally. Yes,
but you know, I enjoyed the movie.
And Batman had, I mean, besides just a character with a stronger backstory, they got Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson as the Joker and Prince. There's just things going for it that Sam Raimi didn't have the budget or to work with exactly.
Yeah.
So it feels a little bit like a low-budget Batman at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we know how I feel since these movies make me give me that catchphrase.
Gave you the catchphrase, I hate movies.
But no, I've talked about it more. No, Crime Wave, there's nothing left to say about Crime Wave. And Dark Man.
Nothing anybody should say about that movie ever.
We're done
again.
With that. Dark Man, for me personally, was okay. So, didn't love it. But it was fine. But I know for sure that's probably going to be my... Well, I shouldn't say that, but it'll be one of my least favorite, I think, out of everything we're going to watch. So we'll see. That's because I also hate violence and, you know,
you
whatever.
Do, this,
so
hey,
if there's going to be violence, I really want there to be something like super compelling about it.
Right.
So that's... And I just...
These were not incredibly
compelled.
Violent movies.
No.
Did you think Dark Man was
Dark
violent?
Dark Man was violent enough for me. Like with the.
I thought it was ballsy that they kill off the assistant. I did not...
Yeah, so unnecessary anyway, but...
But again, it's, you know, the shooting happened off screen. It's just, it's the animation.
Yeah, but
violence.
It's...
But I thought it was ballsy to kill that guy. You know, they could have, like, let the assistant hang around and be his little minion, but...
No, they... Hey, well,
it gives him a real motivation.
Yeah, they got to
show his buddy.
They got to show these guys mean business.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I don't like implications of violence either, so even if you don't see all the cigar finger cutting or you don't see, like, all the shooting, like, I don't like... So for me, like, I don't find violence entertaining, really. So if there's going to be violence in it, to me, it has to like support a more compelling storyline. So like even with The Sopranos, for example, I always close my eyes because I don't want to see the violence for real. But I think that violence is like important to a deep storyline and, you know, development and stuff. So if it's going to be like a violent movie for me, I just don't really like movies that are just pure entertainment and violent, if that makes sense, which is why Dark Man would not work for my style.
Yeah, I think once you get to a movie like Fargo, I think that which there's plenty of violence in, but I think...
Yeah, or like Miller's Crossing was like that too. It was like violence,
exactly.
But like there's, you know...
Have you gotten to Fargo yet?
Oh, no. We're going chronological order.
All right.
So we're still in 1990.
Yeah, now we are,
Now we're caught up, and we are, I got to say, because... I think both of us had a lot of issues with some of the films in the Coen Brothers' early canon.
Yeah.
Well, we're about to break into the Coen Brothers' golden age here. We're going to have like five killer films in a row.
Good.
So
better
be
good.
That's really exciting.
It'll be really interesting to relate Crime Wave into Fargo.
Exactly. First, we had to take care of some early missteps, and I think we did that with this episode. But we're completist here on Accept the Mystery. That's the point. We're going to do everything.
Yep.
So
next week we cut off Jackie's finger with a cigar cutter.
Yes.
To see if it can be done.
But hey, maybe it won't. Maybe it'll just like sever a tendon or something.
Oh,
That won't be that bad.
Stop, my fingers hurt.
Okay. Well, then that does it for the movie review segment. Let's get into our final segment, which I'm still calling Raising Air Quizoda. This is where we have Jackie and a guest face off. In a...
Can we run that back one more time?
I can. Wait.
I like it. This is putting me in the mood.
It really does. That music just makes me happy every time.
It gets me in the spirit.
This is where we have Jackie and our guest face off in a quiz loosely inspired by something that happened in one of the movies. In this case, today's quiz is about... Bizarre cures and medical procedures.
Ugh.
Great.
I hate that too. I hate medical stuff.
Your guess was you thought it was going to be about burns. It's not about burn victims.
Well, that's close enough.
Close enough. It's still about weird medicine.
Which I hate.
I'm ready.
So 10 questions, all multiple choice. When you think you know an answer, just say ding.
Yeah, ding is the one.
Yeah. Question number one. Which of these was used by the ancient Egyptians as a contraceptive? Spider webs. Crocodile dung. Or snakeskin?
Ding.
Ding.
Jackie.
C. Snakeskin.
Snakeskin?
I'm going spiderweb.
You're saying spiderweb, Jarrett. You're saying snakeskin.
Jarrett wins.
You're both wrong.
Ugh.
Oh,
what?
Man.
dried crocodile dung was inserted into the vagina. The idea being that it would soften as it reached body temperature and then would form an impenetrable barrier.
Ew.
Well, yeah. I've tried that and I know it doesn't work.
God, that sounds like so much infection. Right.
That, I know, exactly. That's just like a recipe for a terrible infection.
Ew. I hate this quiz.
Already, we're only one question in.
Because I hate disgusting medical stuff too.
It's like, I guess, you know, yeah, it's like plaster, you know, it's soft at first and then it hardens.
Stop.
Some other contraceptive pessaries was the term used back in the day, included tree sap, lemon wedges.
All these things went up a woman's vagina? Like, yeah. What?
Cotton. Yeah, I mean, that one's not that crazy. Wool, sea sponges, and also elephant dung.
We're all disgusting.
I mean, they didn't have latex back then.
Worth a shot.
Right?
Worth the shot.
It's just like, you know, whatever works, whatever you got on hand.
Why were they worried about contraception in ancient Egypt anyway? What was happening?
Good point.
I think throughout human history, you just sometimes you wanted to have sex without worrying about making a baby.
Mm. Wow, that's shocking. Disgusting.
You couldn't leave every baby in a basket and let it sail on the river like Moses, you know?
Well, like, did they know that semen caused babies? Like, they must have. So why would they think any of those substances?
Pharaoh was avoiding a political scandal.
It's weird because that's something I've wondered about before. When did the first who was the first human to realize that having sex led to babies? Because there's not like a direct link. It happens 9 months later. Mm. At first, you might just think, oh, sometimes women magically get pregnant and have babies.
No, I think it's something like it's got to be like instinctual, like
right?
Yeah. But that's a good question, too. But, I mean, like, animals know why they're mating.
Do you think they do, or do you think they just are driven by instinct to mate?
They do. They know why.
Do you think they realize it leads to babies?
Maybe they don't, like, know directly, but there's got to be something hardwired into you that's like, do this action because you're going to have babies.
See, I think it just stops at do this action.
Yeah,
they're just like, just fuck, not thinking about why.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought about that difference. Yeah, maybe.
But I think by the time they got to ancient Egypt and they had, like, you know, libraries and pyramids and stuff, they figured it out.
Right. But they didn't really figure it out because they're using crocodile dung, but whatever.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Sure.
I'm telling Sarah.
Question two. A fecal transplant is a medical procedure that takes the stool of a healthy person and puts it in a sick person's colon. Advocates of fecal transplants claim the procedure alleviates many ailments. Which of these is not one of them? Chronic diarrhea, obesity, back pain.
Obesity? Ding.
Ding obesity? Jackie?
It doesn't help.
It helps with two of them, does not help with one of them.
Hmm. I hate losing. I'll try C.
Back pain?
Yeah.
Jackie gets a point.
Oh. I was thinking that was the most practical.
No. Fecal transplants can eliminate bacteria like Clostridium difficile that causes possibly life-threatening diarrhea. And not only that, but many advocates believe because your intestinal flora is a major factor in obesity, cleaning it out and replacing it with a thin person's stool can alter your metabolism.
That's so weird. Ugh. Yeah. I expected to be wrong, so.
No, but you were right. Great. You got a point. Sorry, and Jared. Good to know. Maybe that's
what orifice are they doing this transplant in?
It's like an
like a
the
surgery.
Butt.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But obviously there's an obvious orifice. That's what I'm saying.
No, I think it's like
why do you have to put other?
No, it's like you get taken enema, I guess, from like one person and then you put it in another person.
All right, another thing to try with Sarah.
Oh God.
Question number three.
Poor Sarah.
What percentage of Korean women under 30 have had some form of cosmetic surgery? 25%, 50%, 75%.
Oof. All high numbers.
All high numbers.
Dang, 25. That's rough.
Jackie?
50?
Jackie gets another point.
Woof.
50% of... I should clarify to South Korean women.
Wrong.
Sure. 50. I think it's pretty incompetent.
I was factoring in North Korea.
the
modesty of North Korea.
Yeah, but 50% of South Korean women under 30 have had some kind of plastic surgery. And not just women. Sad. Surgeons estimate the number of Korean men who had cosmetic surgery just in 2010 around 15%.
Oof.
What does it say about South Korean body image?
I think they're an extremely image conscious people.
Yeah, like very perfectionist and stuff.
Yeah. 77% of Korean employers say a candidate's physical appearance makes a difference for their chance of getting hired.
77%?
77%. Ooh. So I think it's just like, it's just a society that believes if you look, you have to look good to get ahead.
How are they affording all this
work? South Korea's like does pretty well. They've got a pretty serious economy.
But for 50%, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if Obamacare covered plastic surgery, maybe.
Yeah, maybe they have state-covered plastic surgery.
Well, because their people need to be pretty, so it's like a national issue. But does that include things like, does that only mean like surgery or like Botox? Because that wouldn't be so expensive, for example.
I don't know. Okay. That's a good question. I'm just wondering, it might just
like
be
how intensive this.
Yeah, it might just be any kind of cosmetic procedure.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You might be right. Yeah, Botox. Not that bad, I guess.
Yeah. Just saying.
Question 4. Which of these famous historical figures is said to have had more than 2,000 enemas? Albert Einstein, Louis XIV, Benjamin Franklin.
Louis XIV.
Louis XIV?
Jackie? Ben Franklin?
Jared gets the point.
Fine.
I feel like I've heard that stuff.
In French high society, enemas were enormously popular, with some aristocratic hypochondriacs taking several scented enemas a day.
Scented?
Scented. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, you're feeling fresh.
Are enemas good for you?
Some people believe they're really good for you.
Huh.
I think
I don't know enough.
I think it might, like, if you do it too much, it might, like, leach fluids out of your body or something.
Yeah.
It seems like it would be bad. Transplant.
Yeah. Well, that's where you got to get the transplant to get it back in. 5. Question 5. Smokers are 50%. Less likely to develop which of these conditions?
Oh, ho, ho. Uh-huh,
Alzheimer's, arthritis, glaucoma.
Smokers of what?
Cigarettes, nicotine.
What was the first one?
Alzheimer's.
I'll say Alzheimer's.
They're the least likely to develop?
50% less likely to develop one of those conditions.
So it's Alzheimer's, arthritis,
glaucoma.
Glaucoma?
Jared gets another point.
We're tied.
You are tied. If you want to,
can't stand.
I guess if you want to stay sharp longer, take up smoking.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
Pick up a pack of smokes on the way home.
Except the
but
mystery.
You're more likely to get like a stroke. So.
Except the mystery endorses smoking as a medical treatment for Alzheimer's.
No, we do not.
You don't co-sign that?
Absolutely not.
I'll endorse that with you. I'll get on.
Thank you. All right, 2 out of 3.
Your personal opinions that do not reflect the opinion of Accept the Mystery. Okay?
All right, fine, sure, whatever. Question 6. In 2009, a woman named Sharon Thornton, a 60-year-old woman who had been blind for 9 years, underwent a procedure called a modified osteo-odonto-carotoprosthesis, and now she can see. The procedure involves removing the eye or eyes and inserting what body part from the patient in the empty socket?
Teeth?
One of them is tooth. One of them is a piece of the armpit. One of them is a toenail.
What? And then you can see?
And then you can see.
But you don't have an eyeball anymore.
You don't have an eyeball anymore. Eyeball. One of these things has been inserted in where your old eye socket is. I might even be able to pull up a picture of this.
So
I'm good. I'm sticking with tooth.
You're saying tooth.
Things in your eye?
Yeah.
How do you look?
I'll show you after you answer the question. I'll show you the picture after you answer the question.
So it has to be
tooth. Skin from the armpit.
Say the name of the procedure again.
Osteo-odonto-carotoprosthesis.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like... I don't know. I'll say tooth also.
You guys are both right.
All right.
And here is the woman. It looks like there's like...
Ew, it just looks disgusting.
It looks like there's like meat oozing out of her socket. It's like a little piece of the meat.
I hate this.
Why?
The surgeons removed one of her teeth, drilled a hole in it, and inserted a plastic lens into the tooth. And now she can, like, recognize faces and read a newspaper.
But why does it have to be a tooth? Why can't they just get a fake glass eyeball? Because it's...
Maybe because it's got your DNA, so the body won't reject it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I would think.
Yeah, but bodies don't reject the glass eye. People have fake eyes.
But a glass eye doesn't help you see. A glass eye is just there to fill in the socket.
Yeah, no, it is, but I'm just saying, like...
This has to be connected to your optic nerve and things like that.
Is it because it had like a tooth has a nerve in it, so it's
50% of South Koreans have teeth for eyes.
Did you know?
Yeah.
It's just hard to tell because their eyelids.
I mean, I'm happy for her that she can see, but Jesus, that's rough.
She has a 20/70 vision now, which isn't great, but it's something.
Oh, poor poor thing. Okay, well,
yeah, that's
I'm
cool.
Happy she can see.
It's kind of cool.
It looks so gross. It
yeah, she just freaks everybody out every time she comes in contact with people.
Ugh, I guess she could wear sunglasses.
Question 7. If you sweat too much, you can go to the hospital to get what's called an endoscopic thoracic sympathectomy. It cuts out portions of your sympathetic nerve trunk, and it reduces how much sweat you produce. But what is the biggest side effect of this procedure? You sweat less, but also, A, you can no longer blink automatically. B, you can no longer sneeze. C, you can no longer blush.
C.
You say C?
Blinking.
Yeah. You say blinking?
A.
Jackie gets a point on this one. So Jackie's now up by one again.
Bam.
Yeah, and for this reason, the ETS procedure has become a cosmetic procedure for people who feel like they blush excessively.
Okay, but, all right.
You
know, just seems bad, because it's like, if you're cutting off your body's ability to do that, it's compensating in another way. And, like, blushing is, like, from your, what is it, like, your capillaries, whatever, expanding and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like it's messing with bodily functions that I wouldn't want to mess with.
It's kind of, it's like a dark man thing. If you can't express embarrassment anymore, maybe you can't feel embarrassment anymore.
No, but I don't mean exactly like that, but it's just like sweating is when you're too hot, or like if you're nervous and you sweat, but that's like your body's like trying to get it out. And then when you can't do that anymore, then it's going somewhere else.
Ugh. But what if you're a person who just sweats way too much? Like you're just leaking sweat to the point
they
that you
do
get
it. You can get Botox injected into your.
True. Can you really?
Yeah. Like if you do Botox in the armpits and that type of thing.
But still, it's interfering with something else. So instead of sweating a lot, something else is going to happen.
Right.
In your body. So.
Right. But like, dangerous. I mean, sweat's supposed to cool down your body, so your body would overheat.
Yeah.
Unless, yeah.
That's so weird. People are so embarrassed of blushing that they would get a surgery, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you feel like you blush too much and you want to feel like you're like calmer under pressure. Yeah.
Is there a procedure to make you giggle less while you're blushing?
I guess a frontal lobotomy? Question 8. Which of these historical figures had a doctor inject a concoction of vitamins and methamphetamine into their buttocks on a daily basis? Uh-huh. Adolf Hitler. Elvis Presley, Jackie Kennedy.
Mm. God, I feel like it's...
Hitler.
Elvis?
You're saying Hitler?
I'm going Hitler.
And you're saying Elvis.
Yeah.
We're tied again because Hitler was the answer.
Yes. Oh, I guess
that one observer remarked that the injections helped keep Hitler fresh, alert, active, and immediately ready for the day.
Oh, good. God.
And tending to stay awake long hours into the night.
Oh, man. Well, you don't want a not fresh Hitler.
No. You don't want a grumpy Hitler. You don't want to get on his bad side. And one historian considered the Führer's crystal meth addiction one reason for his rigid tactics in the later stages of World War II, where he would refuse to allow troops to retreat even under the most dire circumstances. Because he was under the influence of crystal meth.
Just when I was coming around on meth.
Yeah. Now it does this. Two more questions left. Who's going to win? This is a tight game once again.
A battle.
Jackie, you're 2-for-3, right?
I don't know.
Overall, you're overall 2-for-3.
I don't know. I don't keep track. I just get annoyed or not. Like, I don't know.
All right, question 9. An English man suffering from testicular cancer underwent surgery to remove his tumorous testicle. The surgeon began the operation, but midway through realized he had just removed the wrong testicle. What did he do next? A. Crazy glued the testicle back on in a panic. Ugh. B. Copped to the mistake after surgery and cut off his own testicle as penance. C. Removed both testicles and sent the patient home without telling him what happened.
C.
Yeah, I'm going to say C.
You say C? You guys are both right.
One was too wacky, Josh.
Was it too crazy?
A little bit.
But yeah, he cut off, just decided to cut off both testicles.
That seems like what a doctor would do. Like, you just and
say,
you
all right, you're fine. No more
cancer.
Oh,
yeah, the other one, that was no good, too. Yeah,
Yes, spread to that one. Just, but he didn't even say that. He just sent him home without telling him he'd removed the other testicle.
Hmm.
And the guy figured it out pretty quickly. And now he's suing the hospital.
Oh, good for him.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. I support that.
Well, the final one.
This is a tiebreaker.
I know. You guys might just end up tied.
Scared. I hope you have a bonus round.
I didn't come up with a bonus question.
It's never happened before.
Well... True or false? The FDA has cleared the use of medical maggots to disinfect wounds and eat necrotic tissue.
I'm saying true.
You're saying
true? Yeah, I was going to say true also.
Nope. You got to say false. I said true first.
No, because I would have said true. But I think it might be leeches and not maggots.
No, I think I saw this story. I don't know. Maybe, am I right?
You guys are both right. And more popular as antibiotics fall out of favor thanks to the rise of antibiotic-resistant superbugs, which I guess maggots are now better at disinfecting.
I think I'll stick with the Z-Pack.
That's super funny. I don't know.
If they're medical, right? Yeah. It's okay.
It's like this if little fish medical. That eat the skin off your feet.
Yeah, when you get a pedicure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Anyhow, that wraps up this episode of Accept the Mystery.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being on, dear.
That was a little what?
Anticlimactic for a quiz. I would say that's the calmest quiz we have ever had.
Should I come up with a bonus round?
I kind of want to win.
Yeah, I know. So I do too.
That's what it is. Maybe it is. It is kind of unsatisfying to have a tie. I wasn't expecting that.
Especially such a close tie. Like, I get a point, then Jared got a point. Oh, we just tied.
And I'm pretty sure he copied my last answer, so...
Just to make sure that nobody would win.
Okay, you know what? I'll just do this. This is going to be one where you both guess, and whoever guesses closer wins.
Okay, great.
Whoa.
A major trend in the United States over the last couple of years is what's called toe-obesity surgery for people who feel like they have fat toes.
Sure.
You could get your toes shaved down so that your feet look better in sandals and other footwear that requires your toes to be out.
Sure.
This has become more and more popular in America. How much does the average toe shaving surgery cost? Whoever comes closer wins.
Ladies first.
I don't want Jared to hear me. So he doesn't cheat and copy it.
Is this Price is Right rules?
No. Whoever comes closer, either higher or lower.
10,000?
Oh, I was going to do like 1,500.
10,000, 1,500? You guys sticking with your answers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Final answer.
2,500.
Making
sure right. the 10,000.
I know my toe shaving surgery.
I don't know. It just seems
2,500 seems a little steep.
Yeah. Fine. Yeah. Even 10,000 would. I mean, you'd have pristine toes.
Well, I assume that if you're gonna go through the trouble, right. You would want pristine toes,
like shiny chrome toes, flawless.
Quentin Tarantino has paid for dozens of these.
I bet he has. I bet that guy has.
Ugh. Well, I'm happy that there was a more satisfying ending with me being annoyed even that it, I even lost.
The fact that you lost
because it gets me like.
Yeah. Now
gets
you're fired. Now you're fired up. Now you're 2 for 2 on quizzes.
What? Only two?
Yeah.
Terrible.
You can Fun. Catch up. You still got time. Mm-hmm. I think it could get to a passing grade.
We'll see.
Anyhow, that wraps things up for this episode of Accept the Mystery.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on, Jared. If people want to find you, or what projects are you working on? Where can they find you online and see stuff that you do?
You can find me online by searching my name on Google and finding my...
Can you say that full name once again?
Jared Golding.
Cool. You got like a Twitter or social media?
I do. Twitter's at Jarrett Golding, J-A-R-R-E-T-T, Golding.
Sweet.
And yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was a fun time.
Thanks for being here, Jared.
Jackie, plug your Twitter.
I'm going to plug my Twitter. I keep trying to tweet more, but I have nothing funny to say. But follow me anyway. It's M-A-C-Q-U-E-L-I-N-E.
Don't say you have nothing funny to say.
It's not funny. Just, I don't think it's funny.
Or just anything to say.
I have great things to say. I'm just not like a wisecracking joke machine. That's all.
You got to turn yourself into a wisecracking joke machine.
All right, guys. I'll work on that.
And you can find me at Radio TFB and find out other stuff at Radio TFB. I think by the time this episode goes live, the official website for the show will be live.
Oh, yeah.
At acceptthemystery.net.
New homepage.
Couldn't get the .com. Once again, God damn it.
We should have had it like .biz or .something.
Are we a biz?
.eu.
Are we a business?
.eu.
Yeah, we could be part of the
dot
European
TV.
Union.
.co. .ru.
.co.uk.
Yeah.
That'd
be so funny.
Nah, we're just a .net because we're on the internet like everybody else.
You're still special to me. This is my podcast virginity, you little take.
Is it really? How did you feel? How do you feel to be on a podcast with
this? A little violated, but also like I've been freshly enamored.
Good. Well,
that's
I'm
how we want our guests.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could take something out. I'm sorry we didn't have any other stool on hand to put back in. To leave you especially fresh.
Next time.
Next episode, next week, we're going to be doing Barton Fink, which is one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies. And I don't want to say too much more about it, Jackie, but I think you're gonna find this one interesting.
I better like
it. Very interesting. Anyhow, that wraps things up, guys. peace and love.
Lots of peace and love.
Lots of peace and love.